So I failed to introduce myself this morning, even though that was the very first task that was given to me. So I will introduce myself now. I'm Jim Peacock, and I'm an epi with the Minnesota Department of Health. I've been with the Cardiovascular Health Unit for about 10 years, and I'm happy to talk to you guys today. So the title of my talk is Lower Limb Amputation Rates in Minnesota. We wanted to compare this to other acute vascular disease events. So lower extremity peripheral artery disease, or PAD, is what we're talking about today. And really, it's just simply defined as blockages in the major arteries that supply the leg. And we can think of this as one of those three main systemic atherosclerotic diseases. It's parallel to a blockage in a coronary artery causing a heart attack, or parallel to a clot moving out of the carotid artery into the brain, blocking a cerebral artery. These people, like those patients that have had an MI or a stroke, it's associated with a very poor cardiovascular risk profile. I would actually say hypertension, tobacco use, and diabetes are probably the primary predictors of individuals with PAD. So it can be asymptomatic. A lot of people don't know they have coronary heart disease before that first heart attack occurs. It's the same kind of situation. Or it may be noticed as claudication. And claudication is simply that pain that happens due to exertion when someone's walking, could eventually progress to pain at all times. And then that sort of progressive atherosclerotic disease, if it leads to a complete blockage of a blood vessel, that's what's known as critical limb ischemia. And when that occurs, revascularization, or opening up that artery, restoring blood flow to the affected area, is critical to avoid amputation. And it should be known that the primary etiology of lower limb amputations in the developed world is peripheral artery disease. And that's even in patients with diabetes. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to update a lower limb amputation surveillance methodology that we first employed in our health department back in 2005-2008. One of the things we did there is we really only looked at the county level. We wanted to explore at a sub-county level. The Twin Cities metro area is more than half of our state's population. One county has more than 20% of the state. It's difficult to represent Hennepin County against a county with 4,000 people. We wanted to identify disparities in lower limb amputation rates by geography, and we wanted to look at concordance or discordance with known patterns of other atherosclerotic diseases, namely acute myocardial infarction or heart attack and ischemic stroke. We wanted to use this information to identify potential targets to disseminate new PAD identification and treatment guidelines that are under development. So if you're in my talk this morning, this is a graph that I like to show that, hey, we're great in Minnesota. We're the heart healthiest state in the country. We've had the lowest mortality rate for more than 20 years. And there's this big gap that's between our state and the U.S. as a whole. In 1999, heart disease fell below cancer as the leading cause of death, and that was the first state in the country for that to happen. And there was a three-year window, 2010 through 12, in which heart disease and stroke combined were actually less than the total number of cancer deaths. Again, a first in the nation. The pattern for stroke is similar, although we don't have as large of a gap there. It's remained consistently lower than the U.S. as a whole since the 1990s. And we typically rank 10th to 15th best when it comes to stroke mortality. So it'd be great if I had a graph to show you for PAD or for amputations, but we really don't. I don't have a trend graph to share. We don't really have a parallel mortality outcome to heart disease or stroke. Hospitalizations is what I'm going to talk about today, and they're really a proxy for amputation incidents in PAD as a whole, but they're really poor at measuring prevalence of the disease. So we're just really hitting the worst possible outcome for PAD. And there's very little national data that's done consistently that we can use to observe trends or we can compare our state to. So we used inpatient hospital discharge claims from 2010 through 2014, and that includes all of our non-federal acute care hospitals in the state. It also includes Minnesotans who were discharged in the neighboring states of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. And we have a lot of people that go over the Dakotas for care. The missing data come from three primary groups: Veterans Affairs hospitals. So the Minneapolis VA is one of the largest in the country. Indian Health Service hospitals, and we have two of those in the northern part of our state. And Minnesotans are hospitalized in Wisconsin. We don't have a reciprocity agreement for those data, and we do have a section of the state where most of the people are seeking their care over in Wisconsin. Population demographic data come from the American Community Survey, five-year estimates. Zip codes are our geography of interest. That's how our data come to us for hospital discharge data. And we either looked at zip codes or we rolled them up to the HRSA, Dartmouth, primary care service area boundaries, or in some cases we had to create customized areas because we didn't have enough cases to meet a threshold for reporting. We used an indirect age adjustment methodology because of low amputation counts in some of the geographies. We compared that to direct age adjustment, and they were virtually the same. So the amputation method we used when we did this in 2005, 2008, we started fresh. We tried to develop our own, something in Minnesota that was special. And we really should have looked around more to see if there was something out there already. And AHRQ has a prevention quality indicator number 16, which is very similar to what we're looking at. It's simply restricted to patients with diabetes. And so I'll read the green part here. It's any listed diagnosis of diabetes and any listed procedure of lower extremity amputation, except for toes. So that's important. Per 100,000 population, ages 18 and older, and the excluded groups are any listed diagnosis of traumatic lower extremity amputation, obstetric admissions, or transfer in from another facility. The full specs are listed here, and I should note that this is version 4.4, which we used, which was in place in the time frame we were looking at. There is a new version now with ICD-10 codes and uses CPT codes, so I'm not sure how different the methods are. We modified this by including all of the non-diabetic patients with any listed diagnosis of vascular disease. We still have the same exclusions of no traumatic amputations, no toe amputations. And this was really an update from our previous method from 2005 to 8. You know, we started from scratch there, and we were really focused on adjudicating every individual case, understanding all of the codes that were there for their discharge and their procedure codes, and excluding individuals that we didn't think were ischemic or peripheral artery disease related. This update also excluded toe amputations, which we did do toe amputations back in 2005 and 8. So our statewide results is we found 3,600 lower limb amputations in the five-year period that we looked at. And that's compared, five-year period. That's compared to 4,300 in the four-year period using the different method. But again, I don't think they're super comparable because we're not doing toe amputations this time. We did before. Just for context, there were about 46,000 hospitalizations for acute myocardial infarction and over 61,000 stroke hospitalizations in the same time frame. So it's not happening as often, but remember, an amputation doesn't include all of the limbs they were actually able to save. So it's an underestimate of the total PAD burden in the state. So who are these patients? You can see the age group breakdowns here. It's interesting to note that almost half of the individuals who had an amputation were less than the age of 65, which surprised us. About two-thirds had Medicare as either their primary or one of their secondary payers. Diabetes was in almost 70% of these patients. More than half had chronic kidney disease as a co-listed discharge code. Almost 80% had hypertension. And then fewer than 50% had hypercholesterolemia. I'm not sure how well that's populated in a hospital discharge record. So we decided also to look at what was the primary diagnosis group of the patients who had an amputation. Now remember, this is including people with any diagnosis of vascular disease or diabetes or in any procedure code in any position of an amputation. And it looks like 57% are really in that diabetes or cardiovascular vascular group. What's interesting to us, though, is that 17% injury or poisoning was their primary cause of admission, but it was a non-traumatic amputation. Infectious and parasitic disease is 11%. Kind of unusual, but you can see these seven broad groups represent 98% of the individuals had an amputation in that five-year period. So this is our first attempt to get a picture spatially around the state. And what you can see here is there's a high variation by primary care service areas. That's the geography represented here. Close to half of the primary care service areas in the state had fewer than 10 events over 5 years. So those are these gray areas, and that just wasn't particularly satisfactory to us. We have a very concentrated urban population, but we have very large expanses in rural Minnesota. We want to make sure that we're representing those communities appropriately and targeting interventions to them when needed. So our solution here was really to improve the coverage by combining some of these sparse count primary care service areas together. So that's what we did with the second map. So now we have full coverage of the state. Again, you see this high variation by the primary care service areas on the amputations that occur. We added county lines for clarity on this as well. And you can actually see, though, down here in that southeast corner, these are individuals that are going to La Crosse, Wisconsin for care. So we don't have any information really on those three counties. So the map here on the left side is the one we just looked at. That's our amputation incidence, or hospitalization proxy for incidence. The middle one is our acute myocardial infarction hospitalizations over the same time period, and the one on the right is our stroke hospitalizations. I went into this thinking these are gonna be very similar maps. They're gonna be showing the same communities of interest, the same types of events happening in these populations. It doesn't really look like that. We see some sort of, all over the place, some concentrated areas here for our amputation hospitalizations. These are mostly areas we would expect because of poverty rates, because of the particular populations that live in those communities, to see some of that happening. The acute myocardial infarction is a little bit different. We've known for a long period of time that there's a lot more smoking, there's a larger burden, and there's less access to primary care for STEMI and other emergency cardiac events in this part of the state. Now, that shouldn't affect incident events, but it may be affecting subsequent events. There may be people that are not really getting into the proper transition of care. They're not preventing a secondary AMI. And then the stroke hospitalizations, what I'll end up showing you is it ends up being much more concentrated in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, the gaps that we see there. So going in closer to the Twin Cities, again, we see high variation across primary care service areas in very close proximity to one another. I mean, you can drive 5 miles and be in a high area versus a low area. Proportionally, we see more communities on the east side of the metro, so that's the St. Paul area, that are higher than the state, and proportionally more communities on the west side, so these are the Minneapolis suburbs, that are lower than the state rate. This higher on the St. Paul side, a colleague that I'll mention here later in my talk mentioned that there's a great divide of the river in the Twin Cities, and St. Paul's a little more old school, and folks may not be up on the most current treatment guidelines on that side of the river, so that's what he attributes the difference to across the Twin Cities. So this is looking at acute myocardial infarction, and I'll go back for a second. So you can see it's a little bit different pattern that we're seeing. We should have more concentrated areas here on the north side of Minneapolis, again in the central part of St. Paul, but then most of the areas that are even inner suburbs around are much lower than the state as a whole, and the high areas are appearing further away that you get from the core. And when you look at stroke, it's even more concentration here in the inner part of the Twin Cities, the stroke hospitalization events. And we do have a few areas, especially in the suburban areas that are wealthy to the east and west, that have lower rates than the state as a whole. So what are the characteristics of the communities based on whether they're lower, no different than, or higher than the state rate? And in this case, we just looked at zip codes. So we do have a fair amount of missing data. There are about 900 zip codes in the state, and only a little more than half of them had enough cases in order for us to report. But there's some interesting patterns to observe here. If you look at our percent non-white and percent black here, it's sort of an odd pattern where the percent non-white and percent black are higher in the communities that are lower than the state rate than in the communities that are no different, and then higher again in the communities that are higher than the state rate. Part of this is explained by the fact that in general, we have lower amputation rates in the Twin Cities, which is much more racially and ethnically diverse, and there are many African Americans and folks non-white living in those communities with low amputation rates. There's a really strong monotonic increase, though, when you look at percent American Indian, from less than 1% in those low amputation rate communities to almost 9% of the population in the high amputation rate communities. And that is concentrated more in rural parts of Minnesota, primarily in tribal communities on reservations. Household income, of course, lower than the state rate, highest household income compared to the other two groups. When we look at percent of the population under 200% of the federal poverty level, we tend to have a fairly low poverty rate in our state. We went to the 200% level. You can still see that there's a pretty strong association here in the higher than the state rate communities and having the highest levels of poverty. And the same sort of pattern you see with bachelor's degree or education here, the highest levels in the communities that have low amputation rates. So who are these communities? And I thought I could have made a map, but I didn't because I made a lot of maps already. And if you know anything about Minnesota, it's the Twin Cities is a really dominant large urban area, and then we have all of these smaller regional centers around the state. And you could look at these high amputation rate communities. There were 23 of them, and they really represented very different populations and constituencies. So we had this group of urban and metropolitan areas, primarily in the Twin Cities, although this last one here, Moorhead, is the community directly across from Fargo, North Dakota. We have this group, the small city and environs kind of communities. They're very, very white communities. They're in the northern part of the state, and they have either a very strong industrial base or they're a mining community, the eastern Iron Range cities. small town or rural are primarily dominated either by agriculture or seasonal tourism, because that's where people have their lake houses. And then the last group here is the rural or tribal land group. And all of these communities are either represented totally on Indian reservations in the northern part of the state or have large American Indian populations within those communities. All of the communities here that are in bold, they not only were much higher than the state for their amputation rate, but they were also higher for their acute myocardial infarction rate and higher for their stroke rate. So there is some clustering that we see. So conclusions here, large disparities. We've shown that here geographically. We see big differences by type of community. And those disparities existed within county boundaries. When we went in and looked more closely within the Twin Cities area, we saw big differences in very short distances. The communities that are impacted by these higher lower limb amputation rates were very diverse in size, population density, their socio-demographic characteristics, and geographic location. And the high amputation communities were usually impacted also by high AMI and stroke rates, but those patterns differed somewhat across conditions. You could really see that visually in the maps. Again, those high amputation rates, largely in the northern half of our state and the inner Twin Cities, high myocardial infarction rates, perfect timing, largely STEMI system of care, yeah, good. Largely clustered north of the Twin Cities all the way to the Canadian border, and then the high stroke rates were really concentrated more in the inner part of the Twin Cities area and adjacent areas just north. So what are our next steps for this? We would really like to elevate the awareness of PAD as the third vascular disease, engage those communities that have a high burden, and we've identified some of those. We also know that we're not going to be able to apply the same strategy in each one of these communities because they're so different. We want to identify and partner with providers who are passionate about PAD and incorporate PAD into our strategic plan in working on a cardiovascular disease and stroke. We actually did that in 2010. PAD was incorporated as a strategy for us to work on, and we've been able to do very small, limited steps because there really is no funding for us to do the work. And I think it's important to mention, this is written really poorly, but what I mean to say is that I think it's really important to funders, when they fund us to do something very specific, and I mean CDC, and it doesn't touch on a lot of the priorities that we have in our state, it's important to say how those things we're doing impact those priorities as well. So they keep hearing that PAD is an important condition in our state, or that 1305 also touches stroke patients. And one thing that we've been able to start to strategize about here more recently is we'd like to understand what that clinical experience is like for a patient who's had an amputation in the months and years before that happens. How on earth did the patient get to that state? How did they not see a vascular disease specialist where they could diagnose PAD and perform some sort of an interventional strategy instead of having to remove the limb? We'll be able to do that hopefully with access to our all-payer claims database to understand how they're accessing the healthcare system before that event occurs. So I want to acknowledge my two partners, Emily Stiles, epidemiologist in my unit, and Renee Kidney in our diabetes program, who really helped me with this. But I think the most important person to mention is a good friend of ours, Alan Hirsch. He was chair of the vascular medicine program at the U of M, and he was a founder and member of the AHA Council on Peripheral Vascular Disease. He died suddenly in April of this year while at a conference in Florida. And he's been just a powerful force advocating for peripheral artery disease. He's initiated the process to get vascular disease goals added to the Healthy People 2030 process. He's the lead on a statewide program to engage patients to ask about using aspirin as a primary prevention strategy per the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force guidelines, and just a really great friend and mentor, and we're really sorry to not have him with us anymore. I mean, we all work in state and local health departments. It's really hard to get work done if you don't have passionate champions there, people in the community supporting you, and I'm a little worried about us being able to move forward without this guy in our corner. So that's all I got. Any questions? And I can repeat the question back.
Yeah, I was just curious. I don't know. I came a little bit late, so you might have said
okay.
But the three maps and how you said you were surprised at the differences.
Yeah.
The third one, I think, was the stroke hospitalization rate.
Right.
I just wondered if you factored in, and this isn't my area of expertise, but somebody else I work with in New York focuses on overdose stroke stuff. Yep. The stroke certified hospital.
Yep. We should have complete coverage of hospitalizations except for people going to the VA or to Indian Health Service, and that's going to represent very, very small numbers of people, and they actually aren't in the high communities I showed. And this is really looking at hospitalizations. So it probably shouldn't be impacted on whether or not there's high stroke capability in that hospital that they've been involved with the Coverdell program. So interestingly, we are working on some public awareness activities in some of those areas and specifically targeting the American Indian community, the northern part of the state, based on some of this information that we put together.
So another one.
Yeah, so percent non-white, we were just combining anybody that was non-white and non-Hispanic, everybody else. So the Hispanic, Asian, American Indian, and black population. So we're about 80% non-white, non-Hispanic in our state. And it's about equally distributed across African American, Asian, and Hispanic, about 6% each.
And is there a reason you picked 200% of your poverty
calculation? Probably because we have a fairly low poverty rate. There's not a lot of variation, especially if you get outside of the Twin Cities metro area. Okay. Yeah, no, we didn't do that. I mean, we just used that sort of snapshot in time from the ACS from 2010 through 2014. Yeah. Well, it is the most up-to-date demographic data that's available for the geographies we were looking at, zip code. Yeah. There's a question here in front. Yeah. Hi.
This is really funny because it takes me back to the very beginning of my career.
Oh. Yeah. Right. That's something we talked about a lot in our group before Alan passed. One thing that we were actually trying to figure out, are people not in the in a healthcare system where people are going to be screened? And how would we actually measure that with something like hospital discharge data? We didn't know how to do that. We were thinking of looking at sort of number of amputation events or types of vascular surgeries occurring at certain hospitals to sort of to say there must be a specialist there who is a vascular disease specialist as opposed to just a cardiologist or a surgeon doing that work, but we could never really come to an agreement about how to do that. One thing, we do think that we are probably worse off than the nation as a whole in this area. Our very strong in cardiovascular research historically, there's never been a vascular disease program. We never had a vascular disease program in our state, so people are primarily being treated in cardiology domains as opposed to vascular specialists. That's changing a bit, and the only vascular program was the one that Alan led at the at U of M. And I know he had been on a lot of papers with Mike, so they knew each other quite well.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a potential resource, and I know that I'm from San Diego, so I know our population is very different than yours in Minnesota, but there's been so much, I mean, I'm looking at hundreds of papers. There have to be gems of information, and I know he's been working on this since the early 80s.
The American Heart Association's Vascular Disease Council met in Minneapolis at the end of April. Alan was going to lead that meeting, and we got to sit and listen to their first strategizing on how to approach healthy people 2030. And a little bit of the frustration in sitting and listening is that they really can't come up with something other than how do we affect amputations. And they're not thinking upstream further. Part of it is they're looking at data sets of convenience, and I understand that, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of visioning about how to think of this in a prevention-oriented strategy. One major victory they have had recently, though, is that CMS did approve supervised exercise as a covered benefit, which is one of the primary things they want to be doing as an intervention for people with PAD to keep them from amputation. So that's been a big win for them. Okay. Thanks, everyone.